Welcome to Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azzafetti and me, Tirza Price, and we are recording this on January 26th. Hello, Erica.
Hi, Tirza. When you said January 26th, I was like, surely you jest. How is it the end of January already? What does this mean?
It's, I don't understand. Wild. Yeah, no, I'm clinging to the fact that like it's still January next week, so I'm like, we still have like a little bit more of January.
A little bit of a week. Yes.
Yeah, it's wild. This first month has flown by and I can hardly believe it.
Have you been reading? Is like, do you do reading resolutions, or are you just like, what's your stance on that for yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I used to just be like, my only goal is to read more than I did last year. Then like I flew a little too close to the sun on that one because I think I topped out at like 100. I don't know. I think the most books I've read in a single year since I started counting in like 2008 was like 150 books. And that was a lot of books. Also, it should be noted, I was a student at the time. I did not have a full-time job. I was like not responsible for pets or a house or anything. So like I was very much still like, I don't want to say I was a child, but I was, you know,
not child adjacent.
Child adjacent. I was a teenager. So nowadays for a long time I didn't really make reading resolutions. And then this year and like last year, I've been trying to be a little bit more intentional about my reading. And just by like, by that I mean like I'm trying to chase the joy when I can find it. You know, and I have talked about how like we're both mood readers. And so I mean, I'm just leaning into that because for many years I've, you know, worked for Book Riot and I've been on many various podcasts, including this one, where like I had to do a lot of reading for podcasts and I would get like really caught up and like, I got to read everything. And now I'm just kind of like letting go. And last year I reread a lot of books, but I also, like a series that I'd been meaning to finish, like I would reread the first couple that like I'd already read and then like actually finish the series. And I've really enjoyed that. So I would like to try to do more of that this year. Like, and if that means that like I have to go back and I have to reread some books just to get caught up, like I'm enjoying that. But I guess like my only hard goal is I moved into a new house at the end of last year in December, which was very exciting. I get to like unpack all my books for the first time in like 4 or 5 months. And I realized that I own more books that I haven't read than I've read. So I pulled 12 books off my shelf that have been on my like TBR for over 2 years. Like that was like my only sort of, qualification that I was looking for was like, okay, I have to have had been carrying this around for at least 2 years or more. And then I put them in a stack and my goal is to read one of those a month. So I am trying to read more of like what I've already owned and more like of what I get from the library. I've been using the library a ton already in January. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. So not like specific hard goals, but just trying to lean into the books I have and enjoy the series that I've been saying for years that I'll finish.
Ah, that is so real. I feel like I've gone in the opposite direction because I've always been, as you said, a mood reader. I feel like I'm like, I realize because I got the ADDDD for those who know, you know, I feel like I have to sometimes with certain books, depending on what they're about or how they start off. For me, I have to kind of like force myself to read the first 50 to 100 pages. And then after that, I become invested in the story. Because you know how like people say, if you're not enjoying a book, put it down, like DNF.
Oh, yeah.
Life will be all the better for it. And I fully agree with that. But for me, I can only really say that is a thing after the first like 50 to 100 pages. Because sometimes I get past that and I'm just like, oh, actually do really like this.
Yeah. Sometimes books do take their time to like grow on you. Like, and I feel like it's fine if like not every book needs to be like, we're starting in media res and like by page three, you're like, what's going to happen next? Like exactly. Sometimes books do take time to build.
Yeah, and I'm also trying to read more nonfiction. That's a specific objective goal. Because I feel like I don't read as much as I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I should read just a little more just because of my job.
Yeah, I like nonfiction. And I used to think that I hated nonfiction. And I didn't like really start reading nonfiction until... like, let's be real, not even in college. Like, I still thought I hated nonfiction in college.
Yes.
It was after college for me, like, that yeah. And what it took was me working in a bookstore.
Yeah.
I was in an indie bookstore, and I had a coworker who, honestly, to this day, she's probably, like, one of the most widely read, you know, people I know, because she'll read everything and anything. And she would be like, look at this fascinating nonfiction. And I'd be like, in my brain, I'd be like, I don't really like nonfiction, but like, I would always listen to her pitches and I'd be like, oh, she's making that sound really good. So that's how I got to doing nonfiction. And now I do read more nonfiction, but I am a little bit pickier, but I don't know if this would work for you. Mm-hmm. I like reading nonfiction on audio.
That's what I discovered. That's what I discovered works for me. I like, yep, exactly. Okay. So we have our brains brain together. Yeah, that helps so much. I just absorb it better. It's kind of almost like it's a podcast in a way.
Right.
Like one of those informative podcasts. It's a
really long one.
Yeah, it just keeps on going. Like several episodes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That is so funny you say that. That's exactly my solution to me reading more nonfiction.
Awesome.
Great minds.
Well, I think those are great goals, and I will have a nonfiction recommendation for you here in a couple minutes on this podcast. Yes. So, but before we get to business, first of all, I want to tell you about what we've got going on this month, which you've heard before, but it's happening. We're bringing paper back. So whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, if you're on a budget, if you want to read a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, you can now get a paperback subscription from TBR, which is our service of personalized book recommendations. It's curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. So this is a perfect thing that you can buy for yourself. You can buy as a gift for somebody else, but you can get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. And now we're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebook's Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, and thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have seven great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Arena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so the big thing that happened this last week was the, it's last week by the time you're hearing this, but the American Library Association's Youth Media Awards were announced. And I'm going to assume if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know what those are, but they're essentially the Oscars of, you know, children's and young adult lit awards. Mm-hmm. So very exciting. I was gonna totally watch the live cast, but then I slept through my alarm and I had just like a terrible morning, so I didn't actually get to watch the live cast. But that's like one of the fun things about the Youth Media Awards. They usually broadcast them so you can tune in online and watch, but there are so many amazing picks. And I feel like, okay, we could probably do a full episode on everything, probably, just like the YA picks. Yeah. But I'm going to try to go through this a little quickly because we don't have that time. Although the Prince Award winner, the biggest award in YA, dovetails very nicely into today's topic, which we picked before the Youth Media Awards were announced. So
good brains over here.
So let's see. The American Indian Youth Literature Award, which is awarded actually every other year, so it was awarded this year. Rezbal by Byron Graves won that. And then I won't do all the honor books because we'd be here all day. But I will quickly say Warrior Girl on Earth by Angeline Bully was an honor. I love that book. I thought it was amazing. I'd Rather Burn Than Bloom by Shannon C.F. Rogers won the Asian Pacific American Award for Literature for YA. The Sydney Taylor Book Award, which is a book that authentically represents the Jewish experience, The Blood Years by Elena K. Arnold, won that one. And you and I have been talking about that one, I feel like, a couple of episodes. I have it.
I really
want to read it, but I also know that like it's probably going to emotionally wreck me, so I'm waiting for the right moment.
I'm saying you have to be emotionally available for that.
Yes. Also, your favorite, Wrath Becomes Her, Aiden Polydoros.
Yes. That was an honor. Yes. I haven't read that one, but I read the book he wrote before, and Wrath Becomes Her is on my list, and it also is one of those where you're like, you know what? Let me like gather myself emotionally before I read this.
For real.
Yeah.
The Schneider Family Book Award, which is for books that authentically depict the disability experience, Forever Is Now by Mariama J. Lockington, won that award. I have not read that one, so that's exciting. The Stonewall Book Awards for books with exceptional merit relating to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender experience. Only This Beautiful Moment by Abdi Nazamian won that one. I have not read that one, but I have read other books by Abdi Nazamian, so he's a great writer. That was exciting. I'm gonna just kind of skip over the ones that are just for kids, because this is a YA podcast. But the Coretta Scott King Book Award for Author, E.B. Zavoy won for Nigeria Jones.
Yes.
Which I also have on my shelf and I've been meaning to read forever. The Pierre Belpre Awards, that honors the Latina experience. The young adult author winner was Saints of the Household by Ari Tyson. Then they announced the Alex Awards, which are the best books published for an adult audience, but are good, have good teen appeal. So these are adult books, but hand them to teens. Unsurprisingly, Fourth Wing was on that list, but there's 10 of them there. They look pretty interesting. I have not read any of them, but one of Liberty's all-time favorites of last year, Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwame Adije Brenya, was on that list. So that's a good one. And then this is the one that I was going to recommend to you. So the YALSA Award for Excellence in Nonfiction for Young Adults Accountable, the true story of a racist social media account and the teenagers whose lives it changed by Dashka Slater. Dashka Slater wrote The 57 Bus, which came out a few years back and was a huge deal. I listened to this audiobook last month, and it is excellent. So I was very excited to see that win.
I remember us either talking about this or me TBRing it or something, but this sounds, it sounds familiar.
Yes, it was really interesting. It just like very, very quickly, it is about, it's a true story. A small, I say small, like imagine me saying it with quotation marks, small town in Northern California, where there were these teens that were posting racist memes on a social media account. And the social media account was private, but of course it got around. And the incredible fallout of what happened when that account was brought to light. And what I liked about this book is it, you know, Slater follows both, you know, the teens who were posting this stuff, but also the teens who were posted about and who were affected by it. So you really get a very nuanced take of like how it affected everybody involved, I thought. So that was excellent. The William C. Morris Award for Best Debut YA went again to Rezbal by Byron Graves. So yay for Byron Graves. And then the Margaret A. Edwards Award for Significant and Enduring Contribution to the World of Youth Literature went to Neil Shusterman this year. You know, he wrote Unwind. He's written the Sky series. So that's really awesome. I think he probably definitely deserves that. I mean, I was reading his, I was reading Unwind when I was in high school. So he's been writing for a long time.
Nice.
And then finally, because I think, the Odyssey Award is Best Audiobooks for Young Listeners. The Young Adult winner went to Promise Boys by Nick Brooks, and it has a full cast. And I have not read that one, but it looks really interesting.
Yeah, it does. Same.
And then I think the only ones we have left are like the other children's lit. So I will talk about the big one, The Prince, given to the most distinguished work of literature for young adults. So the winner this year sort of set some firsts. It is The Collectors, edited by A.S. King. So it's an anthology with contributions from M.T. Anderson, E.E. Charlton Trujillo, A.S. King, of course, David Levithan, Corey McCarthy, Anna Marie McLemore, G. Neary, Jason Reynolds, Randy Ribe, and Jenny Torres-Sanchez. So that is exciting because this is the first time that an anthology has won. And it is the first time that an author has won a Prince twice, because A.S. King won it a few years back for Dig. So she has won it yet again. And this time it's a group win with all of those contributors. So that is really exciting. And then the honors. Cool. Yeah, I think it's really cool. And I think, you know, anthologies have been so popular and they've been growing in popularity. It's really cool to see one honored in that way. Yeah. And I think, you know, we can talk about this more in the, later on in the episode, but, you know, as an author, like, I think we're kind of always told like anthologies are awesome, but like, they're not moneymakers. Like they're kind of really passion projects, and people do them because like, we really care about the topic and you really care about collaborating with other people, but like people don't do them to make money because they don't tend to make money. So I hope that this one is, you know, a big deal. And I'm like to see that it has gotten this, this award. Then the honors for the Prince honor, Fire from the Sky by Moa Bach-Estat. I have not read that one. Gather by Kenneth M. Caddo. The Girl I Am, Was, and Never Will Be by Shannon Gibney. And Salt the Water by Candace Elo. So I have not read any of those books. And now I feel like I'm a bad YA podcaster because I haven't read any of them. But there's so many books out there. You can't read
There's so many. I mean, even you reading this list off, it's like there are so many books.
I know. And that's a lot of titles. So I, you know, I won't make you type out all of the titles in the show notes, but we will link to a Book Riot article where we've listed out all of these so you can see them. But yeah, it's a lot of great books. I mean, I think, you know, you could have like a year's worth of reading just reading all these award winners. So
honestly,
and I still think too that like there's a lot of really great books that came out last year that like weren't on this list, but like are awesome and probably deserve an award as well. So it is a wonderful time to be alive with YA because there's so many great books coming out.
Absolutely. Yes.
So We have not done an episode on anthologies, and we kind of decided that we should do one on anthologies before the awards were announced, and then the collectors won, and I was like, look at us being all timely and everything.
Look at us being on time. Exactly. We're great.
So, okay. I feel like we should just briefly tell people what Collectors is about, since it is our new Prince Award winner. So it is a collection about people and their weird, strange, surprising, interesting collections. So it's fiction. And I'm just kind of scanning here and reading. David Levithan has a story about a non-binary kid collecting pieces of other people's collections. Jenny Torres Sanchez has a book or has a story about a girl gathering types of fire. So it looks like we've got some speculative fiction. Jean Airey's piece is about 1970s skaters seeking opportunities to go vertical. So basically the idea of like collecting seems like it's being interpreted rather widely, which I think is pretty cool. So yeah, it's an interesting looking book and interesting looking cover, and I think it's a great selection of authors. I'm really excited to get my hands on it. I did not own a copy before, but now I'm like, oh shoot. And of course it's like back ordered everywhere, and probably everybody's got like a long waiting list in everybody's library. But that is what that one is about, and I think it sounds really fascinating. And I have read, I'm like just looking at the contributions, I've read books by, I think, I've read books by every single person who's a contributor to this anthology, and I like all of their books. So
it's a solid list.
It is very solid.
I looked it up after the awards winners were announced. I also looked up the book, and you know, we were DMing each other, and you were like, "Oh, let's talk about this." And I looked it up on my on Libby actually, and there's a wait list. And I will say too, kind of what you were saying a second ago, it's interesting to look at because the cover looks different. The synopsis or the summary, the blurb is kind of different from what I'm seeing with other YA books. So
yeah,
just a little outside, like, of course, like you said, we have a lot of great YA coming out, but looking at this, the cover, the descriptions, everything like that, it kind of does seem like it sits a little outside of a lot of other things I've been seeing, even though those other things are great too.
That is such a good point, because I feel like, you know, it does kind of feel like more like an early YA anthology. And by that, I mean like YA anthologies that were coming out like 20 years or so ago.
Yeah.
Where it was like, yeah, here's like a broad theme. And the theme could be very broad. Like, I've read some really, really broad ones. And the fact that, like, you had these authors coming together and writing short stories under a broad theme was, like, novel enough that people were like, yeah, this is awesome. And now I'm looking at, like, the list of titles that we're going to talk about today. And the themes, I think, have been getting narrower and narrower.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing, I think. Like, it means that, like, we've been getting a lot of really interesting niche anthologies being put out there, and that can be really fun, because if you find something where you're like, yes, that is totally my jam, it's like, great, there's an anthology for that. But this one is pretty broad. I mean, just like collections and people collect things, like, and I think that can be fun because you can interpret that so many different ways.
Exactly. So I'm excited to read it. It looks fun.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yes. I hopefully have a copy coming, so I'm excited as well.
Yeah.
So I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
Or maybe just one question, actually. Fair. Now that I look at it. When you pick up anthologies, like, how do you approach reading them? Do you like read the stories in the order that they're printed, or do you just, or you're like, no, I love that author, so I'm going to go read their story first. Like, do you go rogue?
Do I go rogue? That's so interesting. I feel like I mostly go in order, unless there's some other reason. Like, if someone wants to talk about a specific story from the collection, I'll read that one first. Or sometimes if I want to sample a particular author and I don't feel like I want to read them first, I will read their story first. But usually, there's this collection of stories. It's not a YA collection, and I'm forgetting what it is, but it's a horror collection. It came out like within the last couple of years. Tanana Reeve Du, who provided an introduction or foreword for one of the collections that I'm going to talk about today. I hadn't read anything by her yet, and I saw she was in this collection, so I just skipped ahead to her story, say, and it shook me. I was a little shooken. I was a little shook up, like in a good way as far as horror reading goes. But yeah, usually, unless I have something like that, like I have an author I'm really excited to read, or if someone else wants to speak about a particular story first, if none of that is apparent or none of that going on, then I'm just going to read it in order. I've never even thought about reading it out of order, unless for those other things. So it's funny that you mentioned that. So what do you tend towards?
I usually read things in order because I'm a rule follower, but right. I do, like, if I I'm sort of similar. Like, sometimes I pick up an anthology and maybe the theme is like interesting to me, but I'm not like totally committed to reading the entire anthology, but like right. my favorite author or somebody I really like and respect has a short story in there. So like, I'll pick it up and I'll just like read their story. And then, you know, if I'm feeling like I'm into it, like I will actually, you know, go through and read the entire thing. But I really only read them in order if I'm like committed to reading the entire thing, which I'm so sorry to say this, because like, I know, having been in an anthology myself, like I know how much like the editors of the anthologies really angst over like proper order and placement, because you are sort of building a narrative and yeah. you're trying to like communicate something to the reader by the order that you put the stories in. So exactly. And for me to just like, you know, thumb my nose at that and be like no, I do
I'm gonna do what I want.
I do what I want. I'm gonna read whatever order I want. And yeah. It sort of feels like, yeah, it's kind of disrespectful, but like yeah, sometimes it's what I do. I'm sorry.
Wow, Tirza, how dare
I know.
I was gonna ask, this might be a spicy question, I was going to ask you, when you read them in order, do you feel that cohesion that maybe the editor was, or do you feel like, if I read these out of order, would have mattered? A little spicy question for you.
That is a good question. You know, sometimes I feel like, you know, the order is probably strategic, because like yeah. one story might be a little bit better at drawing you into like the theme or whatever. But like another story, like I once read a story that was in one of, actually, this is one of my favorite short stories in YA that I've ever read. It's called Champagne and Whiskey. It is in the anthology that I am in. So like, sorry to toot my own horn, I guess.
Go ahead and toot that horn.
It's the Rural Voices anthology put out by Candlelight Press, and our editors, Nora Shalloway Carpenter. And S.A. Cosby, who might be best known for his adult thrillers, mm-hmm. wrote a really, really, really great short story. And it's really short. Like, it's so short. I was like, did I get shorted? Like, there should be more pages here. And it's sort of like this mini mystery. But it, like, it kind of hits you like a 1-2 punch, because you're like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Oh my gosh, this is like, now like the stakes are high. And then like, he wraps it up. And it's really brilliantly done. And I think it should be studied for like its conciseness. But I think if it was like the first story in the anthology, like maybe wouldn't have done as good of a job of like bringing in a reader to then like go read the rest. So like, I loved it. I'm so glad it was included, but like, I like that the first story in that anthology is the first story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I've never thought about it myself, that question I just asked you. So it was like, I feel like, is it a thing? Because I've never noticed it, but obviously the editors are doing what they need to do. And that makes a lot of sense, just to like draw people in.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I think it takes a little bit of a light touch to do that yeah. in that way.
So. Some nuance. What was it called yeah. again, that collection?
Rural Voices, and it's 15 authors challenge assumptions about rural America. So yeah, it was a fun anthology to be a part of, and I liked that. I like the theme. It's something I can get behind. So
nice.
But yeah, S.A. Cosby's Champagne and Whiskey, and that one was pretty awesome. So yeah. Okay, we've been talking a lot, so we are going to go to our next sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or if The Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawk, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawk on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, Erica, tell us about some of the books you picked today.
Okay. So my first one is Magic Has No Borders, edited by Sana Charai-Potra and Samira Ahmed. And there's this... Okay, so I don't know if you are like me, but I've always loved reading historical fiction. I feel like I have kind of learned more about history through historical fiction than like history classes.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah. And I know people, you know, it's easy for people to be like, oh, what is school for? Da, 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 da. And it's not really in that vein. But also, what is school for when it comes to history classes? That's a whole other conversation. But for me, I feel like, because when you read, well, fiction in general is empathy encouraging, right? There are like studies on that. And I feel like when I've read historical fiction about different times and civilizations and people, it helps you to like not only know the events, but also live what those characters are living. So you understand it at a more, you understand those historical events at a more emotional level. I say all this because the author's notes, the first author's note in here, talks about partition in India, and it gives really great context to that. And ooh, from that, yeah, for me at least, like I knew about partition. It was a major historical moment, although shamefully I didn't learn about it until later. Again, history classes in the American school system, la da, we'll talk about that later. But I learned it more because I had a Pakistani friend in college. But it happened in like the late 40s, and the writer talks about how her family got split up. They were forced to like the Muslim sections out of India. And what was interesting is what I learned from the author's note alone was that the partition, the splitting of like Hindu and Muslim followers was like started by the British. It was like as a result of them trying to leave, India gaining independence. And I'm like, if that don't just beat all, ain't that some mess? Why did no one ever tell me? So that's an excellent point or evidence of what I was saying about reading historical fiction. So then she talks about, you know, being a brown girl, an Indian girl, not seeing herself in fiction, and how it's gotten a lot better, though, in the last few years. So let me back up a little bit and say that probably from the title, Magic Has No Borders, you can tell there's going to be some magical, fantastical things going on in South Asian folklore. And legends and stuff are literally epic. Like, they're epic poems that talk about the gods and goddesses and jinn and all that stuff. There's a lot of stuff there in terms of story material. And it's colorful and people are dramatic, like gods and goddesses are. They're always dramatic. So anyway, the first story opens up with a body-stealing, assassinating goddess who we learn she doesn't want to be forgotten. So it's like modern day era, but she is from, you know, ancient times. And it's slowly revealed from the jump, we know that she wants to kill somebody. But she's in this host body, who is this teenage Indian girl living in New Jersey of all places. Okay. And we know this goddess wants to commit a crime, which is murder, homicide. Okay. But the host body she has belongs to a girl who is like fighting back. And she's like, oh, it's not usual that my host fight back. So then you learn that she's been doing this for a while. And then it becomes known that this goddess of serpents, has this longstanding feud with these other goddesses. And just through the millennia, she's been reincarnated, and the other two have been reincarnated, and she like kills the dude and all this stuff. So here's the thing, though. The host body is fighting back, and that makes the goddess kind of reconsider what she's been doing for like thousands of years. And so there's this interesting play or struggle, I should say, between the old way and the new way. And that presents itself in interesting ways. And then, of course, you have the other stories that kind of have a similar tug between the old and the new, the modern and the ancient or traditional. And all throughout, you have these brilliant South Asian folklore-based stories. And I live for mythology retellings. I've always loved all types of mythology. So this is like a little catnip for me. Also, the cover is beautiful. We love a beautiful cover. We love a bright and beautiful cover. So that is Magic Has No Borders, edited by Sana Charapotra and Samira Ahmed.
Awesome. Yeah, that one is beautiful. And I actually picked it up. I went to the library last week or the week before, and I just went through and I was trying to just grab a bunch of different anthologies. And that's one of the ones that I grabbed because I was like, it's so pretty. And it's I didn't so get pretty. To it. Yeah. And I saw you were going to talk about it. So I was like, okay, good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is very pretty.
Oh, I should also say Sabata here. There are plenty of great contributors, but Sabata here, that's my girl, all my rage. So you already know. She's a contributor.
Yes. I'm like looking at my copy right now and I'm like, okay, we've got.
You got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sabata here, Olivia Chadha, Preeti Chivar. Sangu Mandana, Swati Tirala, a lot of people that I, Tanaz Bathina. Yeah. A lot of these people I've read and loved. So, all right. My next pick is Absolutely Normal, Short Stories That Smash Mental Health Stereotypes. It's edited by Nora Shalloway Carpenter and Rocky Callen. Has some really great contributors, including Francisco X. Stork, Alicia Dow, Patrick Downs. Sonia Patel, Isabel Quintero. So many great stories. Little disclaimer here. One of my very good friends, Anna Drury, she has a story in here and it is wonderful. I actually read it for her before she submitted it and I thought it was awesome. So nice. Yeah, this is great. It's 16 stories. So that's, you know, a lot for an anthology.
Yeah.
And there's poetry, there's prose. Like, so it's not just, you know, your typical short story. Yeah, Nikki Grimes does poetry.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and all of these talk about different... and then there's like a graphic short story as well in panels. So that is exciting. I like that this anthology talks about various characters and their struggles with mental health. And I think that every character, I mean, every author, they're like writing from, you know, a place of personal experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And they're just, you know, they're short stories that I think offer hope. They're funny. Some of them are really sad. But they are ones that kind of show you like what it is to live with mental health. And I mean, I'm a little bit biased, but my friend Anna's story is about a girl who has PMDD, which if you have periods, it is like this like flush of hormones. And it's not just, you know, oh, you're PMSing, like it makes you like absolutely break down. Like one of the side effects is people like will have like breakdowns, like oh, temper tantrums essentially. And like, and it's not like, it's very difficult to control because you're just like being flush with hormones, but it can be managed. And so like that's something that I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't really think about, you know, as a you know, a mental health issue, but like, of course it is, because, you know, your hormones are affecting your brain chemistry. And everybody that I've talked to, and I don't know, a lot of people who've had this have been like, no, it's like you really feel like out of control. And so, yeah, I felt like I learned a lot while reading this anthology, but also I just really enjoyed all of the short stories and all of the different perspectives. So yeah, this is, it's awesome. It is absolutely normal. Short stories that smash mental health stereotypes.
That's awesome. I'm glad you included that. Yeah. Menstrual stuff is so wild. I wonder, I'm just thinking like, maybe we should, like, is that an episode or something? I'm like, there's so much. 'Cause again, like, you know, women's healthcare gets neglected, but there's so many like wild things going on with menstruation, and it's like, I feel like it's hard to navigate or know what's going on because people don't talk about it as much. So
for real, which is included that, yeah, which is silly because it is. so many people menstruate. It is a normal thing. Come on,
yeah, it's yeah, literally why we all exist. Also, so
right,
there's that. Kind of important, y'all, just saying. But yeah, so I'm gonna get into my next book, my next collection, after we hear from our sponsor. Okay, so the next one I have is another one that starts with a heavy hitting story, but this one's kind of like a little different because instead of being by different authors, it's by one author. Well, I mean, that's not a unique thing with short story collections, but just the other books I have are by a group of authors. It's titled Man-Made Monsters by Andrea L. Rogers. It's illustrated by Jeff Edwards. And OMG. Actually, this was an award winner too. I forgot, or an honor winner. I forgot which one. I have to look again at the list. I meant to make a mental note of that, but this was also honored with the latest awards we were just talking about. So that's cool. This was on my list before I realized it was, you know, an award honor winner. But yes, so this one is kind of interesting because, like I said, it's not from a collection of contributing writers. It's written by Andrea L. Rogers, and it's about this family of Cherokee people through from like, I wrote a note, 1839 through the years. So it's like different stories and it follows them, and it's also horror. So it opens with a Cherokee family trying to escape the Texas Army in July 1839. And again, what I said about historical fiction is very much true here, in that, you know, I know about the Trail of Tears and the genocide that happened with Indigenous North American and First Nations people, of course, but reading about it was different. And this got real. This got really real, really fast. So trigger warnings and all of that, but it was like, oh my God, like it like punched me in the throat. I was just like, oh, I was gasping. I was like, he did what? What happened to your mother? where is she right now? So, okay, like I said, it opens with the Cherokee family trying to escape the Texas Army in July 1839. So you have indigenous people being pushed out to quote-unquote Indian territory out of Texas. And you have the protagonist. She's a teenage Cherokee girl. Her name is Umma. And she's like on the road with her mom and two siblings, younger siblings. And she is trying to protect them as best she can. And it talks about how like the Texas Rangers are so brutal. Like even when they hear the hint of a wagon of theirs passing by, they like hide the children and stuff like that because they would steal women and children and sell them and all these terrible things. And this is true. This is all true. And so they're trying to reunite with their family, the rest of their family. So it's just like the four of them. Again, it's a teenage girl, her mom, and their two younger siblings. And I believe they're slowed down. They slowed down because one of the kids, the younger kids, was sick. So when they take a break, there is this, from the moment they see this wagon, something's off. There's this young boy in the front. Something's off about him. He's kind of blocking out the sun. And Umma tells her mom, she's like, maybe we should go. And her mom was like, nah, everybody's sick. Let's stay here till the morning. And out from the wagon comes what she finds out to be a German man. He's speaking German. He speaks some other indigenous languages. He speaks Spanish. And he's just like, he's described as a dandy, which is like, you know, like flamboyantly dressed. And it kind of doesn't fit within their setting. They're literally like in Texas. This is like low-key desert area. And here he is like very flamboyantly dressed. And with him comes something terrible. So that sets things into motion. And yeah, this story is a lot, but it's so good. So horror, okay? From the first few pages, let me tell you, it's not for the faint of heart. So that would be gagging. Yeah.
That was an American Indian Youth Literature Award honor for young adults.
Thank you, Tirza. I was gonna look it up, but I have too many tabs. I don't want my computer to blast off into space.
It's so good. And I heard about the book. I mean, I just really heard about the title because I saw, you know, it was an honor. But I didn't really know much about it or what it was about. So now you have like sent shivers down my spine, and now I would like to read it. So thank you.
Yeah, it's gross and horrible, and it's all, I think what makes it horrible too, I'm kind of talking a long time about this, but I'm affected, very greatly affected. I feel like for me, like, I feel like what makes it super horrible is like that it is so entwined with what actually happened, like the details of the terror that was enacted against indigenous people was so monstrous that it's easy to translate it to being the result of actual monsters. So that connection to reality makes it all the more terrible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that
makes sense. It's a horror story. But yes, so again, that's called Man-Made Monsters by Andrea L. Rogers, illustrated by Jeff Edwards.
Oof, thank you for that. I'm gonna take a slight shift
it, please,
a bit lighter. Okay, my next pick is Study Break, edited by Ashna Avachat, and has a bunch of contributors, including Jake Maya Arlo, Cameron Garrett, Raquel Marie, Christina Lee, Joelle Wellington. Yeah, lots of good people. And it is, so I like the idea of this one because it's not just like, okay, you know, write a short story about this topic. It is about college. It is set at a fictional university. And it is about a variety of characters. So each short story is about somebody different. And all of these characters, they're either, you know, freshmen or seniors in college. They all live in the same campus or go to the same school. And the stories all take place over the course of a single academic year. And as you're reading them, like there's one that takes place in like September, October, November, December. So it really like spans the year. And they are interconnected. They have nods to each other, which I think is really cool.
Nice.
And also like how complicated to manage that. And yeah, so okay, first of all, I think that there are not enough young adult books set in college.
Yes.
And I know you can be all like, oh, but young adult, it's supposed to end at 18. Like, you know, young adult is a marketing term. It's not a genre. And I think that, yeah, there should be more books marketed towards teenagers about that experience, because like I was terrified to go to college. Like I had no idea what to expect. And so reading more books about it probably would have helped me a little bit.
Yeah.
But anywho, and like not like super sexy new adult romance books, like, but actual, you know, books that are, I mean, not that those aren't actual books, but you know, books where like the romance isn't the point and
yeah,
awakening isn't the point. So I really love that this exists. Also this, book, I'm just going to read you the, a little bit from the back of the book, because I did not pick up on this until I was like halfway through the book, but, the authors who wrote this, they are award-winning and newly debuting Gen Z contributors. And they were all either in college at the time of writing or recent college graduates. So I think that's really nice. Cool that this is, because, you know, a lot of times anthologies, they like trade on big names. But I also think that's really cool that this is an anthology of like newer voices to YA. And that like their college experience was not like 10, 15 years ago. Like it was like very, very recent. So that
I love all that feature, actually. Yeah, I love that.
I think it's kind of cool. So yeah, for all of these reasons, I think you should pick up Study Break. It is edited by Ashna Abhishek, has a lot of great authors, and it tells a cohesive story. So you probably shouldn't read these stories out of order, which was what I was tempted to do. And then I was a little confused. And then I went back to the beginning and I was like, okay, from the beginning.
Read them in order. Don't listen to us. I saw that one and I didn't include it because I already had four, but that was on my short list for things to talk about today. So nice. I will have to, well, it's still on my TBR, so I need to get to that as well. But yeah, so I love ushering in a new generation of YA writers, and that, like you said, it's like the experience of college is like fresh on the brain or currently happening. I think that's dope. So the next one I have is At Midnight, 15 Beloved Fairy Tales Reimagined by Dahlia Adler. And most of these stories come from things that Western audiences will be very familiar with, like the Brothers Grimm, Hans Christian Andersen, Charles Perrault. But Dahlia Adler mentions how there are different versions of many of these tales that exist within other cultures. I remember, for example, editing an article by one of our contributors from a while back that talked about how Cinderella might have Chinese origins because of this like ancient Chinese fairy tale that was basically Cinderella. So it's really, I always like, you know, I like retellings and mythology retellings, looking at something that you're really familiar with through a new lens is always interesting to me. So contributors in this one, Dahlia Adler, obviously. Dahlia writes about Rumpelstiltskin. You have Anna Marie McLemore, who writes about the Nutcracker. You have H.E. Edgeman, who writes about Snow White. Stacey Lee writes about the Little Matchstick Girl, which I was not familiar with. Darcy Little Badger writes about Puss in Boots, which I don't know why that makes me laugh, but it does. I only became aware of Puss in Boots through Shrek, if I'm going to be honest. But yeah, so it's a fun collection. Like I said, it's fun to revisit stories that you're familiar with, that you grew up with, and look at them through a different lens, because it's like, you know, have you reevaluating things in interesting ways. So again, that's At Midnight, 15 Beloved Fairy Tales Reimagined, edited by Dahlia Adler.
Awesome. My next pick is The Gathering Dark, an anthology of folk horror. Ooh. It is edited by Tori Bavolino. And contributors include Erica Waters, Chloe Gong, Hannah Witten, Allison Saft, Aiden Polidoros, your fave.
Hey.
Courtney Gould, Livia Chadha, Shakira Toussaint, and I think Alex Brown. I can't remember if I said his name, but all of these people. So it's actually a shorter anthology, but the book does not feel slimmer than usual. It is, the book has only 10 folk tales or folkloric tales in it. But they feel like slightly longer than like your average short stories, which is like they're more like 25 to 30 pages instead of like 15 to 20. So I love that about this. This is also one of those, like when we were talking about how anthologies like have very specific focuses. So like it's not just a horror anthology, it's like folk horror. So, you know, horror that pulls from folklore and folk tales, but also has like a very like rural grounding and those sort of haunting settings. The cover is also gorgeous. It is very beautifully done. And I really enjoyed this one. It was fun to read about, you know, horror from like different parts of the country. And yeah, they were pretty creepy. I was pretty creeped out. I will admit. So that is The Gathering Dark, edited by Tori Bavolino.
So the last one I have is The Black Girl Survives. In this one, it's edited by Desiree S. Evans and Sarasha J. Finnell. It has an intro by, as I mentioned before, Tanan Reevdhoo. She talks about the absence of Black women and girls from horror media. And when they were within horror media, no books, movies, shows, usually among the first to die. Or they were like bad guys, like voodoo queens or something like that. Nothing wrong with voodoo, but it just has historically been presented as evil in Western society. Horror is undergoing a renaissance in general, and I think Black horror is a part of that, like under that horror renaissance umbrella. So there's a werewolf story, there's a tale of telepathy gone wrong, there's this story about an ancient journal being discovered, and the shenanigans that ensue. The contributors are, again, a very big, like, big names. Aaron E. Adams, Monica Brashears, Charlotte Nicole Davis, Zakiya Dahlia Harris, Justina Ireland, who provides an excellent quote in the beginning. Eden Royce, Vincent Tirado. So this cover is also pretty dope. I like it. It's kind of like airbrushed imagery or something like that. So yes, it's very interesting. Obviously, it's horror. I guess I'm a horror girly this year. Who knew? But yes, the stories will get you good. So I appreciated it. Again,
I was going to say, I love the title. So you go ahead and say it.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, again, that's The Black Girl Survives in this one, edited by Desiree S. Evans and Sarasha J. Finnell.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited to pick this one up. I think it looks really cool.
Yes.
And so, you know what? Let's just round out this episode with some more horror.
Let's do all that. Yeah.
Yeah. My last pick is Night of the Living Queers, which came out this past August. It is edited by Shelley Page and Alex Brown, who I think I misgendered when I was talking about The Gathering Dark. So apologies on that. I think it's interesting to see like the different authors, the crossover across all these anthologies.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are writing lots of short stories, which I love. So Night of the Living Queers, this is another one of those like hyper specific premises, so bear with me here. It is a YA horror anthology. It is they have short stories exclusively written by BIPOC authors who are queer, and this anthology is about the Halloweens that are like change the lives of BIPOC teens forever. So if you like Halloween if you, you know, like horror, if you like queer stuff, like this is going to be an anthology for you. So some of the contributors include some of my favorites, Kaylin Bayron, Sarah Farazin, Kasoko Jackson, Tara Sim, Rebecca Kim Wells, Ryan Douglas, like just some really awesome authors. And so these are very queer, very Halloween-y. I love Halloween. And they also are scary. Now, I did not get to this one, so apologies that I cannot give you like a personal insight on the short stories and how scary they are. But also know that like I am just a wimp. So, you know, I think everything's scary. I love the title of this one. And I also really like the premise. So I think that it's worth shouting out. So this is like an example, I think, of where like really niche topics and anthologies can be really fun.
Yeah.
So that is Night of the Living Queers, edited by Shelley Page and Alex Brown.
Nice. That sounds really good. That's also on my TBR. I remember when it came, I feel like it came out. Did you say when it came out? Or I feel like it came out fall.
In August, last year. Yeah, at the end of August. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, it was one of those that was probably like being, you know, blasted about for the Halloween season.
Halloween, which makes sense.
But you know what? Halloween comes once a year, or it can be all Halloween all the time in your heart. So you can pick this up anytime.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, so, oh my gosh. I feel like, so we covered a lot of ground with a lot of newer anthologies, but there's still like just so many anthologies out there that we probably didn't even cover because I would have thought that like maybe they'd be slowing down in popularity because it seems like, you know, there was a lot coming out and people were so excited and then it just seems like there were a lot out in the market. And I was like, are we going to get tired of anthologies? But we don't seem to be. They just seem to be getting more and more creative, which I think is exciting.
Agreed. Yeah. There's a healthy amount of new ones coming out. So we had like, I feel like we're updating this episode from whenever it first aired with Hey YA. There are so many more new anthologies to cover, to talk about. So
yes. I agree with you. Yeah. So consider this your update in anthologies.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We're, you know, we could just keep talking about them, but unfortunately we are running out of time. Please feel free to leave us feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It lets us know how we're doing and it helps others find us. You can always email us at heyya@bookriot.com if you want to drop us a line or ask us a question. And don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, all things bookish, and my tbr.co for personalized book subscriptions. Thank you again to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thanks as always to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame, for making us sound good and editing out all of our fumbles and our frantic Googling. You can follow me. I hang out on Threads and Instagram these days at Tears of Price. What about you, Erica?
I am on the X app at Erica_EZE_.
You're like the only person who calls it X.
I said it just now. It came out. Please don't judge me. It's Twitter in my heart. I still say tweets.
Yes, I love it.
I feel contaminated now.
It's okay. We'll just, you know, we can go and we can light some sage or something.
Please.
All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us. And we will be back in 2 weeks. But until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.